Okay, so I'm going to be talking on speaking about conductors and new forms. For SL2, but before I go to SL2, I'll set the context, which is about some results on GL2. And the pretty Kazerman is not here. The talk begins with really a paper of his. So let me so I need to set up some basic notation, which I'll use for the rest of this talk. So F is a non-Archimedean local field. And O, ring of integers of F. P, its unique maximal ideal. And pi, a uniformizer for P. So to begin with, let me tell you what the story for GL2. And this is a theorem of Kazerman. Goes back to the early 70s, 73 or some thereabouts, 73, 74 sometime. So the theorem is as follows. So let G be GL2F, F non-Archimedean local, and pi V an irreducible admissible infinite dimensional representation of G. So all my representations are over complex vector spaces. So this V is a vector space, and omega pi will denote the central character of pi. So basically, what Kazerman's theorem is about is looking for vectors fixed by a certain kind of subgroups inside this ambient group. So let gamma naught p to the m denote all matrices of the form A, B, C, D with integer coefficients such that its upper triangular mod p to the m. So this is like the local version of Hecker congruent subgroups, usual gamma naught n that you see in modular forms. And what Okay, so what's done is you look for vectors which are essentially fixed by this. So look for vectors V in V such that under the representation it goes like so let's suppose the central character is trivial. So these are vectors V for which everything in gamma naught p to the m fix the vector. Central character is some added baggage that you have to carry along. And there's no reason for this to be non-zero to begin with. You might never have a vector which is fixed by any one of these gamma naught p to the m. So the first assertion is there exists an m for which vm is non-zero. This is not such a deep statement. Existence of, if I go for a take a deep enough level, then there are fixed vectors. And so with this statement, the next, and this is partly notational. So C pi will denote the first time you pick up a fixed vector. And second, at this level there's a fixed vector. So let's look at what happens if I take any level bigger than this number C of pi. And this statement is far more non-trivial, that the dimension of Vm then goes like m minus c of pi plus 1. So now let me introduce the words in the title. So this number c of pi that you associate to a representation pi this way is called the conductor of pi. If you wish, algebraic conductor of pi. Because I think in automorphic forms there's a notion of analytic conductor, which I'll come to in a moment. So this is called the conductor of pi, and observe that if I take m equals the conductor, this statement says that the dimension of the space of fixed vectors at level equal to the conductor is 1, and this statement goes by the name multiplicity 1 for new forms. What's the new form itself? It's basically any vector in the space. So VC phi is some one-dimensional space, so it's up to, this notation is kind of, it's well defined up to a constant. Take some vector, some non-zero vector, and which is pretty much the first time you pick up a fixed vector. So these are the, this is the conductor and this is new forms. This theorem in various guises shows up in lots of places in automorphic forms. So I'm going to spend some time giving you some glimpses of where new forms fit in, and partly to set things in context, and partly because these issues are relevant to me when I move on to other groups, SL2 in particular. Okay, so here are some, like I said, some glimpses into where new forms fit in. To begin with, L functions. So given some object, there's some L function associated to it. If you have a modular form, you take its Mellin transform and there's some L function. And the local version of that is given a representation pi of GL2 over a local field. So given pi, so this is associated, its local L factor, LS pi. And this is by definition in the, in the L function machinery of integral representations and so on, this L function is in some sense the GCD of certain integrals, which certain integrals z sub v of s, where z sub v of s is really like, it's really like the Mellin transform. So v is a vector in the representation space. And somehow you realize the vector in, as function on the group. So this is an element in GL2. You evaluate this vector on such elements. So this is almost exactly the Mellin transform of a modular form, except it's happening locally. And that absolute value of a to the s minus half, that's some normalization at s minus half. So here are these bunch of integrals, and they form a fractional ideal of some ring in some field, and it is a PID, and there's a generator, and the generator is this L function. And what happens is the way new forms fit in into this is the L function is exactly the zeta integral of the new form. So this statement is to be regarded as L function of a modular form is the Mellin transform of that modular form. So that's one way, one place where new forms come in. The conductor itself shows up in the other sort of local factor associated to pi, which is goes by the name epsilon factor. So for epsilon factors, as usual, like you need to fix a non-trivial additive character on the base field, non-trivial character f plus. And for the rest of this talk, we'll assume that the conductor of psi is a ring of integers. So that's like saying that's a standard assumption. If you take a global additive character of a number field, almost all local components would be normalized like that. The maximal fractional ideal on which psi is trivial is a ring of integers. That's what that means. Okay, so given pi, to this is associated a certain factor, epsilon factor, which shows up in the functional equation. And epsilon factors almost always look like there is a certain mysterious number of absolute value 1, the root number, times q to the minus something like that. So this conductor, which is defined in a purely algebraic way, as you start looking for fixed vectors under certain congruent subgroups, the first time you get a fixed vector, that level shows up in this epsilon factor. The more mysterious part actually is the root number, but I'm not bothering about that. So this is called the root number, some number of absolute value 1, and this is the conductor here. Okay, some more statements. So let's suppose we begin with a modular form. F is a let's say a weight k level n Nevin type of sky holomorphic cusp form on the upper half plane, and let's suppose it's a new form, doesn't come from smaller levels, and let's suppose it's an eigen form, it's a new and eigen. So it's an eigen form for all the Hecke operators. So this modular form is associated, it's in terms of representations, so pi, well there's a global pi now, pi, pi f, so this is a cuspidal automorphic representation of GL2 of AQ. How do you get this global representation? You take this modular form, you'll twist it by, you know, it's gamma equivariant, f of az plus d by cz plus d, cz plus d to the k, something. You kind of twist it a little, it becomes a gamma invariant function. You idealize it, it lies in some L2 space, and then you take the representation generated by that. So it's really like a vector in the pi. So f is essentially a vector in pi, a vector v, let's say, in pi. So this pi itself breaks up as a restricted tensor product. So facts, to begin with, this vector itself is a pure tensor. So it's a, you know, decomposable vector in that tensor product. And what are these vps? If p is finite, so for all finite places, this vp is a new form. So this is a new form for the representation pi p, which is a representation of GL2QP. So this, you know, so kind of the word, so this statement here is justifying the use of the word new form. You know, it ties up with new forms as an Atkin Lehner. And in fact, Castleman's theorem, his paper, he calls it results of, on some results of Atkin Lehner or some variant of that. So, and the relation with real groups is these new forms at periodic places is like the highest or the lowest weight vectors. So this vector in this tensor product, the vector at infinity is the lowest weight vector of the representation pi infinity. Pi infinity is a certain discrete series. I think this theorem is really something which kind of puts new forms into perspective. At least I kind of like this picture of this dictionary between modular forms and representations. And okay. There's something which is normally of a lot of interest when one deals with new forms, and that is, I'll just call it explicit formulae. So there are some explicit formulas which would describe what this new form looks like in certain realizations of this representation. The representation, there is some vector space. That vector space might be realized as a space of functions somewhere or the other. So let me give you one theorem, which is due to Shimizu. So this is a Shimizu theorem. So it goes as follows. So suppose my representation is supercuspidal, and suppose my representation space is in its what's called the Kirilov model. To understand this theorem, you don't need to know Kirilov theory, but what the fact, one fact you need to know from that is then the representation space is simply the space of locally constant compactly supported functions on F star. And Shimizu's theorem, this theorem is implicit in Castleman's paper. It's kind of, but Shimizu really brings it out, and he uses this for other things. So this new form, there's a certain function on F star, and this function goes like, it's zero if it's outside units. It's basically the characteristic function of the unit. So O cross is the group of units in F star. It's kind of a cute result, and it's pretty useful in when you want to, you know, put your head down and do some GL2 computations. One last glimpse into where new forms come in, and this is something which Gross is rather fond of. He's used Gross, Gross and Deependra have a paper called Test Vectors for Linear Forms. The general question is as follows. So just for two lines, let G be any group. And pi V a representation of G. And let's suppose you have some linear functional on V, which is interesting. Given a representation of GL2, there are all kinds of interesting linear functionals, Weidegger functionals and so on. So in that context, I'll be stating some specific result, but this general question is, take some interesting functional on a representation of some group that you're bothering about, and question, can we explicitly, the issue is explicitness, explicitly describe a vector V in V such that the linear functional is non-zero. Let me first make a disclaimer about this kind of a question. Take a vector space, take a linear functional, take the kernel of this, let's suppose the linear function is non-zero. It's interesting, after all, it better be non-zero. Let it be a non-zero linear functional, take its kernel. Kernel is a codimension one subspace. Codimension one seems big, but really it's kind of small. It's like in a vector space, in a plane, I have a line. So if I give you a random vector, chances are it will not lie on the codimension one subspace. So if I give you a random vector, chances are the linear function is always non-zero. But if you want to make it explicit, in the sense of maybe the vector space has some realization, I give you a concrete function and give you a concrete functional, is this non-zero? It's kind of hard. And like I said, Gross seems to have used this for quite a few things. He actually asked us to think about this test vector stuff when we were thinking about new forms for SL2. I'll come to that later. And so here is a little fact theorem. It's basically folklore theorem. Fact. So back to our GL2 notation. And pi is an irreducible, admissible, infinite dimensional, blah, blah, blah. Psi is this character, and let L sub psi be a Weidegger function. For pi. Pi is infinite dimensional, so it's generic. It has a non-zero Weidegger function. What's a Weidegger function? It's simply L psi of 1x01 on a vector, looks like. Fact, a Weidegger functional is non-zero on the new form. This is using Shimizu's theorem, for instance, this is almost trivial for supercuspidals. If one knows the detail that a Weidegger functional on this vector space is simply evaluating the functions at 1. So 1 is a unit, so it's non-zero in a new form. So with some detail from Kirillov's theory, it's kind of obvious for supercuspidals. It needs a little bit of some standard GL2 computations. But this little innocuous statement will turn out to be crucial for us later on. I'll come to it. So this is the general picture for GL2. And these are like I said, it's a few glimpses into where they fit in automorphic forms. A rapid survey of what other groups for which such issues have been worked out. So, there's the famous GL2, GLN. For GLN, n bigger than or equal to 3, this is due to Jacque, Pierce, Shalaika. I'm not going to write any statement at all, I'll just hand you through. The corresponding, instead of Hecker congruent subgroups, you look at so-called Mira-Horek mod p to the m, which corresponds to the n minus 1 plus 1 parabolic in GLN, and which are upper triangular mod p to the m, almost. I mean. So you look at those congruent subgroups, look for fixed vectors, multiplicity 1 is true, conductor shows up in the epsilon factor, and so on and so forth. What is not known is the statement about dimensions. How does the dimension grow? That is not known for GLN. in a recent thesis, there's a student of Taylor, William Russellman. He has some conjectures about how the dimension grows for GLN. At least he has some computations for Steinberg and so on and so forth. So that's the story for GLN. For GL2 of a division algebra, if D is a periodic division algebra, so this is my thesis. My thesis has some results about new forms and conductors of representations of GL2 of a division algebra. So here some other kind of interesting things happen. Multiplicity 1 is not true, but the dimension of new forms is related to some kind of degenerate Whittaker models. So there's kind of other interesting things going on in for that. When I came to Toronto as a postdoc, I had given a talk on that a few years back. And there's some work going on for GSP4. This is due to Ralf Schmidt and Brooks Roberts. So this is again not for all representations. GSP4 is pretty hard. There have been Brooks has been working on GSP4 for quite a while, and so is Schmidt, and they recently tied up to work on new forms for GSP4, and they really have at least a conjectural picture as to what it should look like for Iwahuri spherical representations. And some other kind of representations. I'll just say what other representations are if someone is interested. So this is Brooks has been working on L packet structures and Arthur packet structures for GSP4. He's looking at those representations as Langlands parameter. It's after all a four-dimensional symplectic representation. If it's induced from something two-dimensional, then Brooks had constructed some L packets, and so they have some computations for these class of representations. And so the topic of this talk is the story of new forms and conductors for SL2. And whatever we do for SL2 also works for U2. U11 seems fancy. It's just unitary groups in two variables. It's a quasi-split unitary group in two variables. So this is everything I say from now on is joint work with Joshua Lansky. I'm not going to really make any statement at all for U2 or U11. I'll just suffice to mention this, that you know, if you take U2 and take its derived group is SL2. So if you take U2, take its derived group and jack on the center, center times SL2 is a normal subgroup of index 2. And once you have normal subgroups of index 2, representation theory is quite simple. You know, just induce, restrict, standard Mackey theory kind of formalism will give. Take a theorem for SL2 and that gives you a theorem for U2. So from henceforth, I'm going to bother only about SL2. So from now onwards, G is SL2 of a non-Archimedean local field, and I'm also going to assume that the residue field characteristic is odd. That is not to say that even residue characteristic is not doable. It's just that we haven't sat down and worked it out. It's there on our agenda. I need to introduce some notations. Okay, pi v is again continues to be an irreducible, admissible, infinite dimensional representation of SL2. For GL2, we looked at these subgroups, the local Hecker congruent subgroups. So the analog of that would be pretty much the same. Km for me will denote all matrices determinant 1 with entries in O which are upper triangular mod p to the m. Automorphic forms on SL2 is always far more complicated on GL2. The one basic thing which is like the big thorn that one has to always bother about is stability. Stability is I have this group, I might have two elements which are not conjugate in the group, but are conjugate in some ambient group, go to the closure or maybe GL to conjugate or something. So that's something one needs to always keep in mind, and straight away it comes in, not only this, but this filtration of SL2O that one needs to look at, one needs to look at the, so to speak, the other maximal compact in SL2. GL2 has only one maximal compact, but SL2 has two, SL2O, and I'm going to denote KM prime is this conjugate of SL2O, this conjugate of KM. So here M is non-negative. All right. The second complication for SL2 as against the GL2 story is GL2, the center is connected. You know, I mean, yes, it's a periodic field and all that. When you say connected, it's directly connected. But SL2, the center is plus minus 1. That's not connected in whatever topology. So that's another thorn which will show up in a few places. And so let omega pi be the central character of pi. What is the center? Center is just Z mod 2. So this is just the character of Z mod 2. So we need to carry this baggage around, and I could stick this in here. So what we need to do is Z mod 2 is sitting in F star, and we take any extension of this character omega pi, and this eta is going to give a lot of freedom. This is like an added parameter which we need to fool around with. Okay, with these notations, given a representation pi, SL2 is acting on a complex vector space, look for vectors which are fixed by KM, just like we did for GL2, so to speak, eta fixed by KM. So these are all vectors V in V, for which pi ABCD on V looks like eta of DV. So if you forget that eta baggage, it's vectors fixed by KM. And you need to do a corresponding thing for the other filtration. So let's look at Vm prime eta is set of V in V, for which, you know, rest of everything is the same except this is in Km prime. I'm headed, what I'm trying to do is kind of get hold of some definition of a conductor. And to begin with, we define a notion of an eta conductor of pi, which is eta dependent, and then we'll knock the eta off. So this eta conductor of pi is the infimum, just like in the GL2 picture, the infimum of all the m's non-negative, for which there is a vector fixed by Km, or possibly Km prime, or, and then you minimize over all the etas. Where eta varies through all characters of F star, which extend the central character. So our definition of a conductor of a representation is the conductor is the C pi. Conductor of pi is C pi. Yes, we need to look at both of them, and that it turns out to be important to look at both to kind of get good numbers, so to speak. So with this definition, the various issues that we are bothered about is, or maybe I'll put that on this side and then. So the question that we have thought about, and some of them we are thinking about and some we hope to think about, are these, given this definition. So first is, you know, for GL2 or GLN, there is no L packet structure. For SL2 or SLN and almost every other group, there is some L packet structure that you need to bother about. So is this definition sensitive to L packets? So in other words, the first question is, if Pi1, Pi2 are in the same L packet of SL2, of SL2 or for SL2, then are the conductors equal? After all, if we hope, I mean, maybe I should have probably said this earlier. This conductor for GL2, for a representation, there's a conductor. Now you have local Langmuir. That representation is parameterized by a two-dimensional Galois representation, let's say. Weyl representation, but up to an unramified twist is Galois. So two-dimensional Galois representation, then this number conductor that shows up is the local Artin conductor of that two-dimensional Galois representation. So it's kind of seen at the level of Galois representation. So if we have any reasonable definition, it should be seen at the level of Langmuir's parameters. And so it should, this is something that, this was in fact like a yardstick for us to come up with the right definition, which forces us to look at this other filtration. And so the answer is yes, and this is almost by yes, and so to speak, almost by definition. I mean, by definition. Second, well, the rest of the issue that, you know, so do we have multiplicity 1? Well, before I go to that, here is this notion of a conductor and all representations in an L packet have the same conductor. How does this number relate to, what is the relation of C of pi with other invariants associated to pi? Let me first give you this list of questions, and then I'll tell you what are the answers that, what kind of answers we have to these questions. When I was here in the summer last year, I was furiously trying to relate this conductor to the conductor of the adjoint lift, and it turns out that that is not the right thing to look at. I'll tell you what the right thing is to look at. Okay, and then do we have multiplicity 1 for new forms? And more generally, can we say what is the growth of the dimension of Vm? You know, I'll suppress the eta from now on. You know, there is some eta baggage to always bother about, and that's it's just an additional baggage. You choose an eta for which the conductor is the eta conductor, and then completely forget eta. So when I say Vm, I mean Vm eta or a Vm prime eta. And what's that? No, it will be dependent. Yes, for take the eta which gives the right conductor. For that eta, there could be many etas, and often there are normally two etas. Looks like it's independent of that. You can always when this game of conductors and so on is, if you take a representation even at the level of GL2 or GLN, take an unramified twist. You're after all looking for fixed vectors and a gamma naught, you know, Mira-Horik mod, it's subgroup of GLNO. So it doesn't see unramified twists. So up to that, and up to a choice of maybe one or two eta, it's independent of that. Okay. Test vectors. Exactly this statement. Is there an analog of this statement? Test vectors for Weidegger functional. This this test vectors thing is not a frightfully interesting thing in itself, but when I tell you how it fits in, it's useful for us to formulate a multiplicity one theorem. I'll state the theorem presently. So these are the few questions that to which we have complete answers. So I'll first tell you how the answers go, and then give you some questions we are thinking about right now. Okay, so to begin with, I've already told you that representations of the same L packet have the same conductor. What is the relation of this conductor with other invariants? So two theorems in this direction. First, to put this theorem in context, I need to tell you of a short note that Joshua Lansky and I have written. This recently appeared in Proceedings of AMS, which it's a small theorem, which just for this theorem, suppose G is one of these groups, GLN, or a local field, or D star, if D is a periodic division algebra, or GL2 of a division algebra. If it's one of these groups, and pi is a discrete series representation of one of these groups, and let me put N is the absolute rank of G. So this, each of these groups is some inner form of some GLN, that N, that capital N. If you go to the closure, they all become GL capital N. So capital N is little n in this case, it's the index of the division algebra in this case, it's twice the index of the division algebra in the third case. Then let rho of pi denote the depth of pi. This is a notion due to Alan Moy and Gopal Prasad. The relation between conductor and depth is this formula. So the depth looks like conductor minus n over n. Well, almost, depth has to be non-negative, so a little artifice like this takes care of that. So if I have any discrete series representation, then the depth of the representation is related to the conductor this way. And if the representation is not discrete series, there is really no relation. I don't think there's any formula one can cook up to relate the two. This, we thought of this question because we were asking ourselves the question, is depth well-behaved under the Jackel-Anglin correspondence? And this tells you that Jackel-Anglin, and more generally what goes by the name, the Delin-Karsdorff-Vinyarz correspondence between GLN and D star, conductors match well because epsilon factors are equal, and hence therefore depths are equal. It's if D was quaternion, then that follows out of Schuenpan's thesis, I think, because it becomes a theta correspondence. Anyway, so this is, in view of this, the corresponding SL2 theorem, so this is with SL2 notations, you know, G is SL2, pi, discrete series. With this definition of conductor, it turns out that our conductor gets related to the depth by pretty much the same formula. So let me put rho of pi is conductor minus 2 by 2. And it has to be non-negative, so that's taken care of by this. So depth is something which a lot of local harmonic analysts have been bothering about in a very serious way. I mean, more serious, not just depth, you know, minimal k-types, undefined, all that. So, and conductor is something which really global people bother about because of it's a number which shows up in epsilon factors, and it's functorial in some sense. So in view of that, I find such a formula interesting. Another theorem in the same view, how does this conductor relate to other invariants? So last summer when I was here, I had given a talk, pretty much the same talk, except then we were struggling with the definition of what is our right definition for conductor. And somehow I was furiously trying to relate this conductor to the adjoint lift. You know, SL2, its dual group is PGL2. The most first representation you can think of is the adjoint representation, PGL2 to GL3. So a representation pi of SL2 lifts to to a representation of GL3. And somehow I wanted, I thought it was a cool theorem to prove if I could prove this conductor to be somehow something related to the adjoint lift, a representation of GL3. But what turns out is this. And so let, now G is SL2, pi is a representation of SL2. Let pi tilde be a representation of GL2 such that pi tilde restricted to SL2 contains pi. Every representation of pi of SL2 occurs in some representation of GL2. That's just Frobenius. Take a representation. There are many of them. Take any of the, take any pi tilde, twist it. The twist is not seen at the SL2 level, so there are infinitely many such pi tildes. Assume pi tilde is minimal. I.e. that the conductor of pi tilde is less than or equal to the conductor of pi tilde twisted by any chi for all. Then even after this pi tilde is not unique. There are more than one minimal representations of GL2 which give you the same L packet of SL2. But however, the conductor is unique, you know, if I had just almost the definition, then the conductor in the sense of with our definition is the conductor of this minimal, is this minimal conductor of GL2. And Chandrasekhar Khare pointed out something to me that apparently a similar game has been played at the level of Galois representations. So there's this paper of Kimming which goes like, take a projective local, a local projective representation. So take a, you know, Weyl group, local Weyl group, and take a projective representation, PGLN. There are many, it might have many lifts to an honest to goodness representation. By some lemma of Langlands, any projective local representation lifts to an honest to goodness representation. There are many of them. Choose one with minimal Artin conductor. And then they study that. What can be said about that minimal? It's roughly like this. This is happening at the automorphic level. I tried for a while to see if there's any real serious connection, but I could not. But it just seems interesting that it has the same flavor. A minimal representation of GL2 giving the same L packet is exactly at the Galois level, taking an honest to goodness representation with given projectivization. So it seems to be related to that. I can't make, can't give you any reasonable theorem to prove on those lines though. Okay, so about the other issues, multiplicity 1 and growth, test vectors. I'd like to explain some results, not for any representation, but pretty much the L packet which gave us the greatest amount of trouble, which is, so I'm now talking about three and four in the context of these representations. So let pi tilde be a representation, be a supercuspidal representation of GL2F, which is compactly induced from what Kutzko calls vericuspidal, from a vericuspidal representation of center times GL2O. So there is some, so this is due to Kutzko, this kind of construction. In his proof of the local Langlands for GL2, he had this construction of supercuspidals. And let me tell you what's happening at the level on the Galois side. So these are representations whose parameter, whose Langlands parameter, what the Langlands parameter is a two-dimensional irreducible representation of the Weyl group. I'm assuming odd residue characteristic. Well, somewhere I've assumed that. And so we are in the tame case. Two-dimensional irreducible is induced from a quadratic extension. If that quadratic extension is unramified, those are exactly ones which parameterize these supercuspidals. So on the Galois side, there's an unramified quadratic extension showing up. And for such a representation, one knows that pi tilde, restricted to SL2, breaks up as a direct sum of two representations, and this forms an L packet. An L packet of SL2 or SLN, they all come like this. You know, take a representation of GLN, restrict to SLN, it's a finite multiplicity free direct sum of representations, that forms an L packet. Or equivalently, it's GLN acts on SLN by conjugation, and hence it acts on its dual space, so to speak, or space of all representations. It's an orbit. A GLN orbit in the dual space of SLN is an L packet. Anyway, there are various ways of looking at an L packet for SL2 and SLN. It's all this goes back to the famous table of Lebesgue and Langmuir. Okay, so take my pi is going to be one of these. So, theorem. Here is how the dimensions would go. That here is my answer to 3, which includes the way multiplicity 1 sometimes fails. So the dimension of, I take one of these representations pi 1, look at vectors fixed by m with the eta baggage around, I'm suppressing that eta baggage, but choose an eta for which some nice thing conductors match and take that eta, fix it, and then forget it. And dimension pi 2 of m. So one of them would go like m minus the conductor, so I'll simply say c plus 1 by 2. The greatest integer function, and in the other case it would be, you know, the least integer greater than or equal to kind of thing, the Seal function, if you wish, this thing is or so this at x is minus of minus the greatest integer function, that's a little exercise. That's the Seal. So notice that these numbers would be, you know, at some level they're 0, 0, 0, and at some level if it's non-zero, it's 2, and then it's 2 again, and then 4, and then 4 again, and 6. And so in particular, multiplicity 1, so remark, multiplicity 1 fails, multiplicity 1 fails in general, but what is, but always, you know, a kind of probably incorrect English, but always what's true is the dimension of at the level of the conductor for pi is 1 or 2. So it's, if multiplicity 1 fails, it fails only so much, in the sense there would be a two-dimensional space of new forms. And a little proposition takes care of the way this fails, you know. In this L packet, it fails. As you can see, those numbers are, say that at the first time you pick up a fixed vector, there's a two-dimensional space of fixed vectors. Proposition, take one of these. This statement is true for both of them. Take one of these. So let pi be a representation in pi 1, pi 2. This is, for instance, is an analog of Shimizu's result that I was telling you about, of the new form being characteristic functions of units. And let's suppose pi tilde is in its Kirillov model. Then the new form, the space of new forms is two-dimensional, as we know, and it's spanned by the characteristic functions of, in the GL2 context, it's characteristic functions of units. Here it's squares of units and characteristic functions of pretty much the other coset of squares of units. You know, O cross mod O cross square is 2, has order 2. F star mod F star square is order 4, and so O cross minus O cross square. So this is, think of this as the SL2 analog of Shimizu's result on realizing new forms for GL2. And
this is, I mean, vector 2 matrix 2 and 4 corresponds to the local, there's no
yes. This question has been asked before to me. I don't know the answer to that. I don't really know. So take a cuspal automorphic of SL2, take some canonical pure tensor, some vector which is coming out of these new forms. The vectors are different. I'll come to that. There's another point issue that I'm going to bother about. The same thing is going to come up. We'll talk more. And so using this test vectors, you can kind of in an artificial way cook up a multiplicity one statement. So test vectors. So given an additive character whose conductor is the ring of integers, what turns out is an L psi, a corresponding Whittaker functional for the ambient GL2 representation determining this L packet, L psi on the space of new forms is non-zero. And I told you this Whittaker functionals are evaluating functions at identity. So this kind of, I'll just put it in brackets, this canonically picks, so to speak, one out of the two new forms. So in this sense, one can, among all new forms, there seems to be a natural choice floating around. If there is any specific application in mind, one might be able to, use this in some serious way. So I'll just leave multiplicity one at this slightly vagueish level. Yes, exactly. That's exactly what's happening. So these are pretty much the results we have. And so now I'm going to talk about some further directions. So all this has been answered, we've written it out, and it's done. In the GL2 picture, so these are now questions that we are thinking about and we hope to think about. So in the GL2 picture, these new forms showed up in local factors. I told you the L function is some GCD of zeta integrals, and one particular zeta integral is the L function. Is there an analog of that theorem for using our new forms and so on? So we began by bothering about using the doubling method of Pierce and Rallis. That is a zeta integral machinery which gives you L functions for classical groups. And it turns out that this is not well suited with the new forms. And it's not even well suited at the level of GL2. The doubling method applies to PGL2, trivial central character for GL2. And there, if you take the new form and plug in into the doubling zeta integrals, it's a mess. So right now what we're thinking, and this is something again which Brooks Roberts pointed this out to us. I don't know. It's just a big mess. I don't know. Or we don't know. I mean, Josh has also, we spent a few months trying to make this work. Even for PGL2, it's... Possibly. So what, the thing is, the doubling zeta integrals don't really look like Mellin transform. It's not like, yes, it's a different kind of integral going on. Yes. And the SL2 analog, so to speak, of the Mellin transform kind of thing is, so we are right now reading up on these integrals of Gelbard and Jacquet, so their integrals for SL2. So this is the, really what they did was, this is a classical paper of Shimura. If you take a modular form, then its symmetric square L function is a certain integral representation. It's given by integrating against something or the other, theta function, Eisenstein, something. And then Gelbard and Jacquet have idealized that. And they really did it for the symmetric square lift from GL2 to GL3. But they actually supposed to give L function for SL2. So, and I'll leave it at that. So this is something we are investigating right now. And last few minutes, I want to talk about yet another question, which is something which caught my eye like 2 weeks back, distinguished representations. So here is what I have, it's a minor observation, but it's, so here is a corollary to a proposition in Jeff Hakim's thesis, proposition in and the corollary would, this is not explicitly mentioned, but it's not hard given this proposition in Jeff Hakim's thesis. So it would go as follows. So let's take, let E over F be a quadratic extension of local fields and all that. Let pi be an irreducible, admissible, unitary representation of the of GL2 over the bigger field, and I'm missing something. Oh yeah, it's a really of PGL2. So with omega pi is trivial central character. These are the representations that Jeff Hakim bothers about in his thesis. It's a paper in Duke, early 90s. And let's suppose pi is GL2F distinguished. So that means there is an invariant GL2F invariant linear functional from on the representation pi. This is non-zero. So take a non-zero functional there. This is an interesting functional. And do we have test vectors? So here is this, it's something which I observed. It's got to be known to experts. I don't know where it's written out though. So this functional with some standard GL2 computations, you can check that it's non-zero on a new form. It's pretty much trivial for most representations. For some representations, for some actually unramified principal series, is what causes the greatest problem. And so I don't really have much to say. So I'll go back to. So recently, there's a postdoc, Deependra has a postdoc in TIF, Anand, it's a long Indian name, Anand Vardhanan. And Deependra, they have a preprint on distinguished representations for SL2. So the question begets itself. I mean, they have some analysis of what representations of take a quadratic extension representation of SL2 of the bigger field, which is SL2F distinguished. They have analyzed those. Out of their analysis, such functionals will pop out. And is it true? So our the question was, is are our new forms test vectors for these functionals? And I don't really know what the final picture goes like, but we did some Steinberg computations, and the answer is like, if E or F is unramified, the Steinberg of SL2E is always SL2F distinguished. If it's unramified, then yes, in the sense of the test vector is indeed new. There is a multiplicity 1 for Steinberg for new forms, our new forms, and they are test vectors. And if it's ramified, the answer is no. It's some. So I don't know what the, it might be just some silly, maybe there's no final pattern, but something which we'll look at. We are looking at. It shouldn't take us too long. It's not frightfully deep, like I said, but it might be something interesting. I think I'll stop here.